Welcome to a Voice for the Horse podcast hosted by Steve Halfpenny. Steve is an internationally recognised horsemanship educator, Melbourne Equitana presenter and lifelong student of good horsemanship. His passion for learning about horses and helping them become willing partners to their owners is only exceeded by a willingness to share what he has learned with horse owners everywhere.
Hi everybody, welcome to another Talking Horses podcast with Steve Halfpenny. Lately I've been thinking a lot about Tom Dorrance and how he was as a human being, and no better person I thought to ask than somebody who spent a lot of time with him. So John St. Ryan has decided to give us another chat on the podcast, and my first sort of question, I guess, is what sort of a man would you need to be more like Tom? Because I think that who he was has a big influence on how he taught things. So over to you, John.
First word, disciplined. Disciplined. And I always remember Ray saying that, Ray Hunt, when talking about Tom in the early times before I really met Tom and I was around Ray more. And he would say that Tom was the most disciplined person he ever met. And he kind of washed over me. I didn't think, what do you mean disciplined in what way? But as you got to know Tom more, you realized he was very disciplined, very able to just be in good control of everything of his that he could control, himself and how he presented himself to people, to horses, to everything. And then that sort of made me think, well, what's the difference between someone like Ray? You know, I mean, he's disciplined. But I think what Ray was alluding to, and which I think I understand, is that Tom had that ability to just stay absolutely on a course, not waver, not just sort of get sidetracked by things, not get involved in things that he didn't need to get involved with, and just stay true to himself and true to what he believed in. And it wasn't that he would say he had all the answers in anything, but he would just try to bring these things out for people, bring these ways of discovery about, well, obviously most people went to him with horse problems, and how he would help them by asking questions and getting the person to search within themselves. And one of the things he'd say with me, he says, three sides to the horse, John. And I'd say, well, how do you mean? Well, there's the left side, the right side, and the inside. And that's the important part. You know, it's the inside of the horse. And until you can control the inside of yourself, you've really no business trying to do anything with another animal even, you know. So, I mean, I think as I've grown older, I think I understand this much clearer now. I think because of the martial arts background I had, that was a big help for me, because that, from the age of 14 onwards, I was just involved with it for years, decades, teaching and so on, eventually. And I knew that self-discipline was so important, the structure that you had to structure your life around, your training for to achieve things, to get better, to improve. But also you had to have integrity. You know, you had to have not just the ability to fight or to defend yourself, depending on which side of the fence you were coming at, but to control yourself, to control your emotions, to control your thoughts, and to direct yourself and stay on course. And I think that helped me a lot in understanding this way of Tom, where his look at anything, his view of people, of animals, horses, dogs, cattle, he was looking what was on the inside. What's on the inside of that person? What's on the inside of that horse? How is it feeling? What is troubling it? What is bothering it? How can you get it back to what he would call a learning frame of mind? And because you know, I'd say if you don't have that learning frame of mind, then you're not going to get anything of value. You can make things happen up to a point. You can force things through, but at the end of the day, it's not in harmony. It's not, as he would say, true unity. So, getting to know that side of Tom, to getting to know that depth and that character, went a long way to understanding more and more of his work.
Right.
I hope that makes sense.
It does, but even then, you know, I've written the book True Unity, but even that needs a bit of explanation, doesn't it? What is true unity?
Yeah. And Millie did a wonderful job, you know, I mean, over the years, it took her, I'm trying to think, I was talking to her a while back about this, and I think it was 4 or 5 years where she was just going around with a little tape recorder. And, you know, everywhere Tom went helping people with horses, she would be there. And then she'd go home and she'd write it all up, word for word. It was all verbatim. It was all there. And then she would put it together and then take it to Tom, and he'd look through it and, well, yeah, that's okay. This is okay. And well, but that won't be understood. So let's try and make some sense of it. And gradually, he finally approved of it, and Millie was happy with it. And then that's the book. But even the structure of that book, it starts off with Tom talking about his upbringing, the way he was raised. And just to give you an idea of where we might look at it, you and I might view it, but somebody else might not see that. I had a Portuguese friend many years ago, probably 20 years ago, and I gave him the book, True Unity, and I said, he's a horseman, he was a trainer, teacher, whatever you want to call it, but he was specifically in Domo Vaquera, you know, the Spanish riding, which I was very interested in many years ago. And I gave him the book, True Unity, and I said, I think you might like this because it has a lot of good concepts in about working with horses. So I gave it to him, and he gave it me back probably the next day, which I knew wasn't a good omen. I said, well, what did you think? He said, I don't know. He's all talking about, you know, the family and his children, his brothers, his sisters, and his parents. I don't know about horses. I said, well, that's the whole setup. You know, that's the whole point. You know, he's explaining how he came to be what he is as a person, because that history of how he was raised informed how he was going to treat others, because he had that wonderful upbringing, if you will, with discipline. And as he said in the book, it wasn't that he was, you know, it wasn't like forced to do things. He was allowed to explore as long as he was, you know, sensible about it. And that gave him that freedom to explore, helped him understand more, and gave him the ability to be able to impart that kind of thing to another animal, whether it be horses, dogs, or cattle. And he would look to the inside of those creatures to figure out how we can maybe direct them to do what he would like them to do. And this guy just totally missed that completely. And that's why it's difficult to, it is not formulaic, Tom's way of working. And I think that might be getting to your next question. So you were asking me something.
It is.
That you might
be
curious about.
I find myself trying a lot to, if I try to help the person and the horse to the best of my ability, then the structure sort of falls away for me, and I end up being more of a one-on-one, which is not, it doesn't suit the way I've been teaching, I guess, because I have groups of people. But I was just wondering, how did Tom set his situations up when he was teaching people?
Yeah, that's a good observation. And I remember the first time that I saw Tom, and I think I may have told you this, Steve, you know, a couple of years back or so, but for the people who are listening, I'd already been around Ray quite a lot, and we'd worked on Ray's cult starting video program that we put together. But he kept saying, you've got to go and see Tom, you know. So eventually I went to see Tom at a clinic that he was doing in Indio. And it was just, it was a big place, a polo place. Bill Devane is an actor in Hollywood at the time, and he had this huge ranch down in Indio, which is Southern California. And he loved polo, did Bill? Well, he had some friends of Tom's who were actually running the training program for the polo, for Bill Devane's polo horses. And it's a huge, huge place. And the guy, Tink Elordi, is the guy I'm talking about here. Tink and Jana, his wife, and they were good horse people, and they'd followed Tom. So they supported his way of working. So they put the clinic on there. Tom went down. I said, I've got to go down and see this guy. So I went down, and it was a four-day thing. I think it started maybe Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And I got there, and I see the first time I ever met Tom. He's sat there in the bleachers overlooking the arena. And there was probably about 15 to 20 riders in the arena. Just, it was early, it was 8:30, something like that. Clinic starting at 9. And there's about 15, 20 riders of all disciplines. You know, you could see immediately, okay, so we got some polo players. Yeah, I can tell them. Yeah, we got some cowboys, you know, some working cowboys. And we got some dressage riders. Oh, and that girl looks like she could be a hunter jumper on that horse. And you just seen all this mix of different. And I thought, all right, this is going to be interesting. Bearing in mind that my experience of clinics prior were the Ray's clinics, which were structured, you know. And, you know, if you've been on Ray's clinic, you know pretty damn well that you're going to be asked to, okay, stop your horses, walk your horses, stop your horses, back your horses up, step one foot to the hindquarters, step another foot, back your horse, go forward, set off at a trot. Okay, stop your horse from the trot. And it's there, you know, and it was pretty much formulaic, if you will. But, of course, he's helping people in between. But his idea was, as he said, I remember, you know, I'd put clinics on for a later. And I remember one guy saying at a clinic, he said, Ray, you know, I've been doing your clinics for like past 5 years. And you keep doing the same thing. And I wonder when you're going to put on a clinic for us, you know, more advanced riders. And Ray said, when you guys can pick up on the foundation riding, when you guys can pick up from square one and take it with you, we'll talk about it. Walk your horses, trot your horses. So I'm expecting this with Tom, you know, same kind of thing, because, you know, that's, Ray came from Tom, from learning, as far as I could see. Well, Tom's opening line, he gets the microphone on. Well, okay. What would anybody like to do? So, now, bearing in mind my teaching at that point, I wasn't teaching for the public professionally, horsemanship, but I'd done nearly 30 years of teaching martial arts since being a late teenager. By the time I'd got my first dan then and going on, so I'd always been teaching. And it's structured. It's formulaic. It's kind of like Ray, you know, okay, everybody gets in line and you all do this exercise, and then we go into punching, then we go into kicking this way, then we go into kicking that way, and all the rest of it. So I'm like, I can imagine going into a martial arts class and standing there. Okay, boys, what do you want to do? Anybody? So I think it took a lot of the other people by surprise who hadn't experienced Tom as well. You know, they're all looking at each other and on horseback. And then one guy just put his hand up. He said, could you help me with this horse? You know, I got a problem with this transition to the lope or whatever. And okay, yeah. Tom said, bring him, let's take a look. And he'd ask that person to do something and maybe spend 10 minutes, that's all. And then say, okay, now do you try that? Now go ahead and go over there and try that. Right. Anybody else? Well, then people are cottoning on now. Okay. Yeah, I got something. You know, well, let's look at you. So it was pretty much like he didn't send everybody around, do this, do that. It was like one at a time. And then you could see sometimes some people getting frustrated. You know, you could see, like I overheard one lady talking to her friend and saying, this is ridiculous. You know, I came here to, you know, learn some horsemanship skills and I'm just sitting around here waiting. And I thought, even then, I thought, no, you're missing the point. Because the point is to watch and listen and learn how he's helping that person to develop and adjust and change the problem that they see they have with the horse. And if you can't see that, it's because you're just too blinkered. And I saw it, and that's the way I look at it to this day. And that's why it's difficult not to want to go to that place. And I think that's probably what you're feeling like, because you know you can do much more for that person one-on-one. And even if you're just saying, look, I'll give you 10 minutes and then send you off somewhere, and then you can come back in a little bit when I've gone through all these other people. I think that's much more helpful, unless you've got everybody all on the same page. And you and I both know that never happens on a clinic, because you've got somebody who's, you know, got, you know, really good skills, and irrespective of how long they've ridden, they've got really good skills. And they may only have ridden 10 years, but they're excellent. And then you've got somebody who's ridden for 20 years, but their foundation is weak and their connection with the horse is weak. Well, and they might be alongside somebody who's, you know, just got a horse and they've only had it 6 months, but they're about the same level. But you feel like you feel bad. You say, I'm sorry, but you two need to go together because you're both missing those foundational elements. And then I can go over here and help this person who's really needs to go a little bit more advanced and wants to know some more depth. And I'm not talking about technique. I'm talking about learning the inside of the horse and being able to see that, read it, and then help that horse discover something that it can be doing what we want it to do. Because you can force them to do something, but then you build in resentment. And it's never, even Ray talked about that so often, where, you know, he said, I don't want it to be a slave. It's a partner. Now somebody has to lead this dance, you know. So, and I want to make sure that I'm leading the dance, but it's a partnership we want. And I think that goes on to this whole business of how can you get that across to people unless you are talking at that level, at that depth. And if you're just sending people around, go around, okay, do 20 circles to the left, in 10 circles to the right, going a straight line, this, that, and the other. It's just, it's like pony school when I was a kid, you know, in British Horse Society stuff. That's what we did. But when I was exposed to Ray's way of working, which was the first thing that changed me, that made me realize how much I was missing. I could ride, but I didn't have a connection as such. I didn't have that depth of understanding of the horse. And nowadays it's marvelous. But the information available is tremendous. You know, where back then you'd listen to Ray, you'd listen to Tom, and you could believe it because you could see it before your very eyes, and there was no trauma, there was no harsh force or anything like that. It was just the horse, let the horse find it. Now, things like that, when people say, set it up and let him find it, it's kind of hard to understand when you just come from this regimented structure of Pony Club, British Horse Society, and so on. But when you see it actually in operation and it works, then you think, wow, this is powerful. And it looks great. And the horse looks great. The horse looks happy. The horse looks comfortable. I'm more interested in the horse-human connection being comfortable together than I am in achieving whatever, you know, a good passage, a piaf, or whatever. It's wonderful if, you know, people want to go that way. It's like jumping and things like that. I'm more interested in seeing that connection of the two beings. Yeah. And to achieve that, I have to be talking to somebody in depth. And I can't do that if it's, you know, if I'm just telling 20 riders to go around and do this and do that and the other. If that makes any sense.
It does. What I think about a lot is like a Tom.
Cheers.
Tom's the godfather of all this stuff, really.
Mm-hmm.
How did it, you know, it's gone in a different direction, and it'd be really nice to find a way of steering it back to where it came from in the first place.
Yeah. Well, I think that's why I'm just always trying to keep his memory alive and his work. And there's a heck of a lot of people who are training horses now who owe their livelihood to the knowledge they gained from Tom.
Mm-hmm.
But some aren't paying the respect to that. You know, it's like, you know, they came out of the womb that way. And it's not so, you know, it's, and also it's just somebody that you would like to think all these qualities, you know, through life, as you go through life, you think of the things you've done through life, and you think of the things that you've made mistakes. And in Tom, you know, he said he's made mistakes but he tried to avoid it always from the get-go. Whereas maybe I look back on my life and think of the mistakes I've made through being in a hurry or a rush and not understanding the situation and then just forcing my way through it. And I know I've done that. And I don't think Tom ever really did anything like that. I think he just kind of sat back and figured it out. He used to say that because of the situation when he was at the family, you know, their property in Wallowa County in Oregon, there was himself, there was Fred, there was Bill, and there was Jim, all working at one point, and then Fred left, Jim left, Bill left. That left him looking after the whole place, all the horses, all the cattle, and his parents who were getting on in years. So he said, you know, if I'm out there and I'm doing something, I'm on my own. I might have a dog. I've got my horse and I've got a dog. I'm on my own. If I don't set it up right, there's nobody there to clean up for me. There's nobody there to pick me up. I've got to do it right. So he made sure, you know, it was a sort of like, as much as he understood the self-preservation of the horse, he looked and he understood his own, because he wanted to, you know, he had a huge responsibility to look after this place. And that, again, made him the person he was. And, pretty phenomenal.
It is. I mean, I've spoken to you before about the horse that I've got, and he makes me think an awful lot about Tom, because in a lot of ways, he's taken me to the edge of my knowledge. You know, and it's, how do I help a horse who gets so worried? Because I've tried controlling his feet, making sure he does what I tell him. That doesn't seem to help him. Let him make his all his own decisions doesn't seem to help him.
Yeah.
But it's like, what do you do with an animal like that?
I think, you know, again, it's like, I love things like that. You know, it's like, I wish we were closer. You know, I just enjoy trying to figure something out like that. It that gives me, if I can do it, that gives me will to carry on, to go on, you know, because you think, I'm doing some good. Because that at the end of the day is all you want to do. You know, I want to do some good in this life somehow, whatever I'm doing. I don't, you know, I'm not trying to achieve some notoriety or anything, but it makes you feel good when you can actually help another person, another creature. And when it's a puzzle, that's why Tom enjoyed it so much. You know, that's probably why we got on so well, because I needed that help. I was like, when I started teaching the public at first, I got on pretty good, mainly because, well, I guess I was athletic and so on and so forth, and I had a good ability to teach because of the decades of teaching people. So it just rolled into the horsemanship thing. But where I was deficient was when I came up against the so-called problem horses, and I couldn't always figure it out. So I had to go to Tom, and he just, you know, like the first time he said, bring that one up. What, really? Yeah, bring it up. You know, well, it's 6 hours drive, but I'm on my way. And then another one. And then, you know, it just trying to figure out, what is that? What can we see? And that's why you got to be there, or at least, you know, kind of see it on film at least or something. Mm-hmm. It's like, I was doing a lot of this on the phone with Tom at first, and he would give me ideas of things to do, but when he saw me with the horse, we'll do this. And he wouldn't like say, I know what to do, we'll fix it with this. He'd just set you off on a little exercise or something to do. And you might not think it's related, but he does start getting you closer and closer and more connected. And then the horse would start feeling, I'm letting down now. And those horses that were so bothered would be like, is that all it is? That's just what I was looking for, said the horse to the man. But it takes some figuring out. And it's a kind of joyful experience when you go at it the right way. I know you would, you know, because you're keen and you're interested in this. And that's the other side of it, Steve. You've got to be invested in wanting to understand this way of working. There's so many people out there now teaching horsemanship. There's so many, you're going to go on whatever it is, YouTube or something like that, or social media. You know, you want advice. That's a great place for advice, you know. you find out that, you know, if at first you don't succeed, just go on social media and you figure out there's 100 other people who didn't succeed either, and are not likely to, you know, because they're just going at it full tilt one way or another. But I think it's just great to figure out these things out. But like, we should visit about your horse sometime, you know, and just let's have a bit of investigation on it, you know, maybe run some video or something like that and play. Because, it'd be nice to, it's always nice when the horse feels better, you know, when it starts to feel, okay, now I'm getting it, you know. But it's tricky.
It is. I got to the point with him where I'd almost said, well, you know what? It's too stressful. I just won't bother for him. You know, like, I'm just making his life miserable at times. And then I was thinking, I wonder how long Tom would give it to before he came through. And then I think I remember a story of him saying it could take 4, 5, 6 years with some horses. Well, that's commitment.
Yeah. And I think it's little bits of things, little breakthroughs here and there, And those are what you search for. And then you, when you get these little breakthroughs, and it might be just, it might be something where there's a connection. Well, it is always a connection of some sort, but you might not be trying to, your message isn't getting across. You know, your horse is bothered. Why are you bothered? What are you bothered about? Okay, you know, stay calm. But there's a line that we're, as we're working sometimes with a horse that, and I've done it, you go beyond that line and the horse is, I was doing all right until you crossed that line. You know, I was willing to keep trying and now you're, it's like so many times I tell people when I'm teaching and they want to, you know, I don't know, achieve some particular, get over some difficulty, whatever it is, you know, if the horse is bothered about something or I can't do something, you know, can't get, it won't go over this jump now, you know, or it won't, I can't get it to do a rollback because it just doesn't figure it out. Well, whatever it is, break it into small pieces. And then when the horse makes that little change, that try, really respect that. And then don't wear it out. That was the thing that Tom used to say a lot of, you know, don't wear it out. Because it gets to be more like punishment for the horse then, because it says, well, I did it, but what's the point? Because I'm doing it again and again, you know. I feel so sorry for a lot of the performance horses that have to, you know, get on the treadmill, as to where, you know, like, well, we got to do 20 circles of the lope this way, 20 that way, and then we got to do 50 sliding stops, and then we got to go and do whatever, you know, it's like.
Yeah, understand. With him, it's that everything that you would want to train him to do, he can do. Like, he can do rollbacks and do all that stuff. Like, the actual physical stuff, easy. It's just if I go for a walk with him, he might walk alongside me one day. The next day, he's just rearing and launching and jumping all over the place.
Yeah.
And then 2 days later, he's quiet again. And it's like, what is it out here?
Yeah.
That's different. Is it colder? Is it windy or is it, I don't know.
Right.
What is it?
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't think the training, I don't have a doubt about. I can train him to do anything.
Yeah.
It's like, can you just,
but just
get him to cope with life?
Yeah. To get it on video.
So I'll do that. It'll be good to share that with everybody.
Yeah. It could be interesting that. It's just, you just hope you can come up with something that'll, you know, help a little bit or work. And then I always use that line of Tom's, you know, well, look, Steve, you know, I'll tell you something, try this out. And if that doesn't work, I'll give you something else to try out that won't work as well. He used to say that to me on the phone and go, oh, all right.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. And you're right. Cause if you were there, you might just have a look and do something totally different.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, it's like, yeah, that's not always achievable, you know. So you can't be everywhere, so you just help where you can.
I find it interesting, you know, because I try and work on his confidence. So I might take him in the arena and get my stock whip, and I can crack it and wave flags around and do everything. He doesn't even bat an eyelid.
Yeah.
Somebody walks past and picks up a flag and he jumps out of his skin.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. How come
he's not okay with all that side? Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
But then if he gets something, like I had a whole lot of poles out for a reason in the arena, and I think it was about 20 meters long. I just made him for a diagonal line across the arena.
Uh-huh.
Then he steps over and he starts side passing. I went, okay. So he goes all the way down, like 20 meters sideways.
Yeah.
It's totally relaxed. He went, got it.
Yeah.
I know what you want. So it's wow.
Why didn't I do this before?
Yeah. So maybe that's it. Maybe it's just confusion.
Yeah.
I think he knows what I mean, but maybe he has no idea.
Yeah. That's always a hard thing, you know, because we get a picture in our mind what we need, what we're looking for. But How are we getting that across to the horse? Where is it that the horse just doesn't see what we're trying to do? And the more you build up that bond, that connection between you, I say this to people a lot, you know, I said, you know, it's not just feeding your horse. It's not just, you know, cleaning them. It's not brushing them. They don't know you're paying the bills, you know. It's something else from inside you where when you reach in for that, you reconnect or you connect or reconnect dependent on the situation. And then the horse starts to let down within and feel better. It's funny, I was only last week and played with me, stud, well, he's not a stud now, he got gelded him. But when we moved, when we sold the ranch and moved, he was generally just, he was the breeding stallion. He wasn't ridden much. I just started him just to make sure he was good to handle, et cetera, and rode him very little exposure. So when we sold the ranch and moved, things have been pretty chaotic the last couple of years anyway. So I haven't hardly touched him. I'd, you know, gone up and looked after, you know, and because we never boarded the horses before, so that's a new, unique experience. And then by the time you've moved your horses from various establishments, because they don't cut the, they don't make the grade as far as I'm concerned, you know. When you've run a place yourself, you know, you know how you want things run. The horses are prime importance. They get fed on a consistent time scale, and everything should be looked after, and you know, and when it's not, it's really irksome. And I ended up pulling my horses out of two places, and this one place we found hopefully will make the grade. But, and it's not that I don't think I'm hard to please, maybe, but I just think about the horse, you know. And if you're going to be, you know, if you're not feeding on time or you're missing a feed, these are important bloody things, you know. And if you're if you're not cleaning up like you should clean up, and the horses are standing ankle deep in mud and crap, man, you know. Anyway, so where was I? Oh yes, I digress. I went out last week and I thought, you know what, I got a bit of time, let's play. And I took him out, got my saddle out, put the saddle on, went down to the arena, and he's so bothered. He's so good. What the hell? 2 years. And my mare's up there because he's like really connected to this mare. So we got all that stuff going on as well. She's calling, he's calling back. And I'm thinking, hey, what am I? You know, come on. So let's come on. Let's just walk a little bit. Let's do this and that. You know, and all it was just took time. Wasn't, it finished on a good note. We didn't do anything fancy, nothing special, but things calmed down. And I thought, yeah, I got to go out again, maybe tomorrow or the day after. And of course, there's all kinds of things going on. I was doing this, doing that, so I'd never got out. Took me a week before I went out again. And I went out in the week, took him out, took him down, saddled him up. He started and he called once and I said, hey, come on, you're okay. You know, let's do this and do that. And just got him interested in things. And I don't know how to explain it, except you could feel that coming together. That sort of like, okay. And after probably 20 minutes, we were back to where we were 3 or 4 years ago, you know, when the last time I had done much with him. Mm-hmm. And it was so nice to say, it only took 20 minutes, maybe, well, one session of 40 minutes the week before and 20 minutes now. But it makes you realize that, yeah, I could have gone out. I could have lunged him. I could have got him worn out. And, you know, then maybe wouldn't have achieved a thing except got him more frustrated and, you know, like, let's get this over with kind of thing. Whereas at the end of it, he's feeling like he's, as Tom would say, I want the horse to feel like they'd rather be with you, whether you're on the ground or on the back, rather than anywhere else. And that's the feeling I got at the end of that. And it just, again, highlights the things that Tom was so good at helping you bring this thing up, bring this out of you by getting to the inside of that horse and finding what it is that you can help a horse feel better about things. And it just makes it, you know, like I said, we didn't do anything fantastic. We didn't do any wonderful whatever movements, high school movements or anything. We just rode around a bit and it was nice and felt connected. Yeah.
Yeah. It's good to have your horse that doesn't have any fears in his life about his own safety. I think that's my goal.
Yeah, it's like, oh, my granddaughter got me onto Instagram a couple of years back, I think. And every now and again, I'll go on it. I mean, you've been on it, Instagram thing.
Yeah, I think you have to if you're trying to run a business nowadays.
When you see what people do with horses, it's, you know, because it's international, it's like the people, and it's all these, I don't know, I guess it gets into your feed because you like horse stuff, you know, and then, but the way people treat them, oh, good Lord. It's like, do you really have to do that?
Yeah. And then if somebody gets hurt, you know, there's lots of those horrible videos where somebody gets injured.
Yeah.
And then everybody's just rubbishing them. And it's like, well, that poor person could have died. Like,
yeah.
A bit of better advice might be useful rather than.
Yeah. It isn't, I don't know. That's the whole thing about, well, we could go on to structure and social media and things like that. I was talking to my friend. Yeah. Oh, God. It's so wonderful in so many ways, but there is such a loss of quality. You know, in that book of Tom's, More Than a Horseman, I think it was Rodney Flournoy's excerpt, and he was talking to Tom about something, and he said, they were discussing somebody else. And he said, well, Tom would never talk about, would never say anything about anybody unless, as he said, I like to think that if they're not here with us right now, but they're in the other room and they can hear everything we say. Mm-hmm. So if I'm going to say anything, I want it, you know, I should be able to say it without being derogatory or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
That was the principle of it. And I just find it now where, whether it's social media, it's not just social media, it's the powers that be that run things and they present things and they are derogatory about other people. They are, they'll rubbish other people, they'll be dismissive to the point of being, and rudeness isn't even covering it, just being plain nasty and not having any care, because it's like, well, you're hidden behind this. Even now, you know, it used to be, well, you'd have some kind of weird handle, moniker, where you didn't know who the hell made that comment. Now it doesn't matter because people just say these things and they don't care. They don't care what other people think because I don't know. And it's easy for me then to say, you know, the intelligence of a gnat or something like that. But then, you know, there's, oh, you're so clever, you know. Well, no, I'm not, you know. I don't have any degrees or anything, but I do have empathy for how other people feel. And my wife Joyce said this morning, she says, I can't believe it, how cruel people can be. There's these four kids. When I say kids, they'd be, I don't know, early 20s or something. And they're in, maybe in San Francisco, which is it's a place to live in San Francisco. In many respects, it's wonderful, is that area, Silicon Valley, etc. But it's also very damn expensive. So you've got to be on a high income, probably in the IT world or whatever. So these four kids have made a plane, kit plane, and gone up and flown it. And the damn thing went down and crashed and killed all four of them. Well, it's tragic. What are the comments? Well, the usual, that's terrible, that's tragic. Ah, there you go, typical IT kids, you know. And then they make some really bad comment and something like, well-deserved, best way for them to go. And you think, the parents might be reading this.
Yeah.
I know I'm getting off the subject now. I just find it's just the whole thing. Like the qualities that Tom had, you know, we talked about that right at the beginning.
Yeah.
Were, that was part of the thing where, you know, be a man, be a person, not a man, I'll probably get myself in trouble with somebody else now, but be somebody, be a human being that has some character, good quality of character, and empathy for other people. It doesn't make you a snowflake or whatever, you know. It doesn't make you weak. It just shows you've got some decency about you, you know. But I really have gone off the topic, haven't I?
Yeah, but it's sort of related. It's all related because when I'm, you know, I did a clinic at the weekend, and you try and show somebody what you think is a fitting way to deal with the horse, and then you watch their interpretation of what they've just seen you show them.
Aye.
And think it looks like you're punishing the horse for making a mistake, and they're probably trying to correct something. So for me, that message of how do you get into their mind, that if you try to help the horse find an answer rather than make it do what you want.
And that goes back to that thing that Tom is, you know, so powerful with, which was developing that feel, developing that timing. And without it, you're struggling. And like, again, like he would say, it has to come from the inside of the person and the inside of the horse, that feel. Yeah. And, it, you know, some people say, well, you can't teach feel. I disagree. You can't teach feel to some people because they don't want it. They don't have the patience for it. But I think you can help people develop a way of working toward it so that you can encourage it within yourself. Because otherwise, if you just said you can't teach feel, well, what's the bloody point? We might as well just all bugger off and go to the pub, you know? This is not a bad idea. But, you know, I think it's kind of dismissive to say that, because I really do believe that you can help people find something and make things better. But that person has to want it, you know.
Yeah.
Again, it's like when Tom would say something about, you know, you're at a clinic or something and somebody would ask him a question. And he would say, well, rather than just answer it, I might ask them a question, because I want them to think about things, and before, and think things through before. And I remember, I was picking up on that a couple of weeks ago, because I was just reading through some notes I had at home, you know, just about that big. And I thought, yeah, that's something I really want to get across to people at a clinic. So I made that little thing saying, if you're coming to my clinic, part one, this is what I want you to think about. And I said, think, what are you coming for? What is it you want? What are you looking for? Don't just show up and say, okay, I'm here. What are we doing? You know, think, what is it you want? What are your struggles? If you're here for a particular thing, be it a behavioral thing or to achieve a more, I don't know, a new skill with your horse, well, what have you done up to now? Where do you think you're not kind of working out with the horse on this? And then that will help you. And that's what Tom used to do. He'd say, you know, I've got this situation with this horse, and I was just thinking of something I'd said to him once about a horse that I couldn't believe. This horse, it was really good until I wanted to turn to the right, and then it just blocked me off. It's just this big warm blood I had in training, and it just bamboozled me. I couldn't figure it out, you know. And you know, Tom would joke about it and say, well, you know, just make sure you're always going left, you know, around things. He'd say, well, at some point I'm going to have to come back, you know. But he'd say, what do you do with this, or how do you set that up, or whatever? And I would think, and I'd reflect, and I'd think, well, I and then I'd realize I hadn't done something. So rather than him say, well, have you done this, that, and the other? You know, have you made, you know, does he, is his, I don't know, does his right hind step under as well as his left hind or whatever? You know, he'd ask, what have you done? And then you'd find, oh, yeah, he does do that better than the other or whatever. Is that something? Mm-hmm. And then he'd help you. But then when he and in this particular thing he'd said, where he said, I like to ask a person a question after they've asked me a question, because I know then they're, if they are willing to look and then, you know, answer that question, I know they're trying. Whereas if I ask them a question and they're just, well, you know, not interested, or they don't have an ability, not ability, the desire to even bother answering, well, I don't have the desire to continue, because in those cases, I'm more than likely just be wasting their time. And that's how it was. You know, I've seen that happen on clinics where, you know, you'd have somebody ask him something and he'd ask them that, you know, well, what about this or that? Well, it just does this, you know, just out of the blue, blah, blah, blah. Well, what have you done with such and such a thing? I've done all that. Okay. Right. And, you know, he might give him something to do, but you know he's just going to, it's pointless. Because even the thing is, he'd try and help the horse, but he didn't want to go and waste somebody else's time who was really deeply interested and had a real deep desire to learn more, to develop feel, to get better timing, to get a better understanding of the inside of the horse, what's causing this. And when that person was there, well, then he'd give you all the time in the world. Ray was the same. You know, people used to say in his later years, he was, you know, he's as old gruff, he's just a cranky old cowboy, you know, or whatever. And he was just fed up with stupid questions, you know, or people that weren't prepared to put some effort into it. Not stupid questions, that's not a good way of expressing it. Just people who just don't want to put any effort in. They want a quick fix and move on, you know.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I saw him here in Australia when he was on oxygen, like in one lung oxygen.
Yeah.
It's 40 degrees and he's still on his horse riding and just had that. Maybe he had some sarcastic comments to people, but he just had that smile on his face the whole day.
Yeah.
You know, and he's enjoying being here.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah,
and even that, like, he'd have that side about him where he would, like, make a sarcastic comment about something or whatever. But then he'd, you know, he'd have the toothpick and he'd turn around and say, you know, and if the shoe fits, wear it. If it doesn't, I wasn't talking to you anyway. Yeah, that kind of like ameliorate everything. Okay, right. You know, the shoe fit me right there. So I guess you were talking to me. Yeah.
You have everybody there thinking they're doing something wrong. It was good. And you hear stories of Tom like just dropping in on somebody, you know, somebody that he was trying to help. He might just pop in and see how they were going.
He liked when he was traveling, you know, after he sold up the Wallowa County, I think he just hit the road and he just show up in different places. I think it was just a case of, I remember asking him about this and, you know, saying, well, you just had this truck with a camper shell. You didn't even have a horse, you know. I'm thinking he's, you know, knocking around with a horse trailer and, you know, riding the range wherever, whatever. No, he's a little truck and a camper shell. And he, like you say, he'd just show up different places, I think. And I think it was where he was just so curious as well. And he liked to look at what other people were doing. And sort of like, I'm guessing, compare and see like, well, I wonder if they could do it better or if I'm doing it better or whatever. And then little by little, it fell in different places. Like I can't remember which ranch it was. He was at maybe the 25 or something. Because I think Jim was at the 25 ranch, his elder brother, and he was the Buckaroo boss. I think he got injured, so Tom went up to help out. And he just approached things in a way that made things easier for everybody, for the, you know, for the stock and so on and so forth. But when I said, how much was the pay? It might not have been there. It was when he was showing up at other places. But I said, how much did they get, you know? And he said, I didn't ask her any money. Well, what do you mean? Like, and I said, well, I just showed up there, you know, and they'd a place to sleep and feed me and that. I said, but you didn't want any pay? No. If they were paying me, they might run me off. Okay, all right. But his needs were minimal, you know. He didn't need a whole lot. Never did. He was happy with his lot. You live to, you survive, you've got enough to survive. Keep Margaret happy.
Sounds like he had an amazing amount of humility.
Oh, incredible. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm still working on this biography. And thankfully, my son Shannon's started helping me on this because technically, although I've got understanding of film editing and so on, nowadays the stuff is so advanced that I'm behind the curve on it. And if you'd put me in a big editing suite with all the functions, I might be okay up to a point, but I need that extra technical help. So he started helping with this, with Tom's bio. And where was I going with this? What were we talking about with Tom then?
Humility.
Humility, that was it, yeah. And one of the times I was sat with him, we'd just finished working with some horses, and I said, can I ask you about, you know, different equipment? And he brought out all different bits and bosals and things like that. And we went through them and he was saying why he would use this and that. And I just said, you know, it's just great, this. And I just don't understand why more people aren't working like this with the horses. And he just kind of went quiet. And I said, you know, it's so special. It's just, and he, you know, people have been doing these things for years. There's good people out there. There's been people in different parts of the world, I'm sure. And they're doing good work with horses. It's nothing new. I'm thinking, man, and this is before any big explosion of, you know, I don't know, the Horse Whisperer movie and all that stuff, mm-hmm. You know, all that hype. Before that. And I'm trying to say, you know, come on, we got to do this, get this out to the world. And no, he's just, no, I'm happy here doing what I'm doing. And even then, you know, like Margaret said, you know, in where they were in Salinas, which is Central California, I guess, I'm on the coast, more close to the coast. The local people, they weren't that. There were some people who followed him and that, and who understood. But then there were some people who just thought he was completely bonkers. You know, don't know what he's talking about. It's just the way it is. That's life and people, isn't it?
It is.
And it didn't bother him. You know, he just, well, I'm not, you know, because he wasn't looking for any notoriety. It wasn't like looking for what do you call it? Followers to be an Instagram. No, don't. What do they call them? Influencer.
Yeah. An influencer.
Yeah.
Well, he surely wasn't. He surely was an influencer.
Despite himself. Yeah. But again, it's leading by example, and you know, leading by example, but without banging the drum. You know, and he used to say, you know, if people want me, they'll find me. You know. And I think you're torn between, well, I'm torn between things like that. When I was teaching martial arts, and we were pretty big as far as the competition was concerned, and then when I went to Muay Thai, teaching Muay Thai, promotion wise, we had good fighters, we had a good gym, so it was very easy to push it and promote it, and that side of it was not a problem. But I find that with the horsemanship thing, because of how Tom was, I just find it really difficult to self-promote. You know, it's like, if people want me, they'll find me, kind of thing. Because I just feel like I've still got a lot that I want to learn myself more, you know, and get the joy of working with horses and helping them through a difficult period with their owner, if you will. That's the fun aspect for me, and I'm really happy with that. You know, I don't know. You know, just going out and doing these, expos, it doesn't do anything for me. I just not really want to do it.
No, but I think the more people that know about you, John, the more are going to know about Tom. You know, so that's.
Yeah,
that's great, because there's a lot of people I speak to have never heard of you, and I keep on saying you got to look at this guy.
the funny thing about that, Steve, is that I always understood how Tom felt when he would say, I'd say, you know, there's people I haven't even heard of you. I kind of like it that way.
Yeah.
I think it was probably because he was kept busy enough with people like me showing up with horses. You know, like he didn't need to be going out. You know? But then again, he never charged me a damn thing. Never.
No, he just enjoyed the journey, didn't he? And that's we're not all like that. Some of us have got to pay the bills.
that's a fact. Yeah, I mean. Like doing the clinics, he only did the clinics just to be able to purchase that home for him, because when he and Margaret got married, they didn't have a place. So when they got offered the spot on Bill's property, that was what he was for, just to raise enough money to make some down payment on that. And then he found out that he actually liked it. Which is kind of, you know, like from somebody who was, as he said, you know, like he said, well, Margaret says I'm antisocial, so I guess I must be, you know. But it was more, I'm trying to think who spoke about it. It might have been Mike Beck or somebody in the book. And they were saying, or Brian Newbert maybe, where they said that he was very, quiet and reserved, you know, in social situations, you know, like the times you go like in a ranch situation where, you know, everybody gets together, okay, it's lunchtime, or we all get together. Well, he'd go and get his food and then go back outside and just sit in a corner somewhere, you know. But as he went on, he was always a fun person to be around. You know, he liked a joke, as long as it was a clean joke, no swearing. Yeah. And he'd like teasing, you know, making little teases about stuff. So I think he got to realize that he had that ability to make people laugh as well, you know, and not in a harmful way, but he could tease you about something, and you know, yeah.
That's great. That's great. Well, thank you for sharing all that. Look, we've been chatting for an hour already, so that's gone pretty quick.
All right. Time to go and do something else. Go and feed the kangaroos.
Yeah, go and take this horse. I sort of made a decision to take him out every day for a month and see what happens at the end of the month. And there's that commitment. You know, when you've got a horse that's not the easiest one, you tend to take the easy one out when you've got there.
Yeah.
You have a choice.
Yeah. Yeah. So when we had the ranch and we had like, I don't know, whatever, 10 horses in training, I said, okay, we start with these two, you know, they'd be the two most difficult ones, you know, because after that, I'll have the energy for the others. But if I leave these two,
Well, I've got other horses here to work for customers. So if I don't work mine first, I probably won't bother. You know, at the end of the day, he goes first and then whoever. It's going to be 40 degrees today.
Send him. Is it? Oh, dear. Shoot some video, Steve. It'll be interesting.
I will. Yeah, I will. I'll share it with everybody anyway, because lots of people have been following his little journey. So it'll be good.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to A Voice for the Horse podcast. You can find more information about Steve at stevehalfpenny.com.